So trust in the news should mean a lot to each one of you here this evening. When a new school is planned for your community, you need to know where it's going to go and who's going to pay for it and what good is it going to do for the kids that are going to go there. I'm not going to do any dancing, sir. I'm sorry. You're going to have to turn that off. When a new highway is announced, you want to know accurately where that's going to go and how it's going to impact your neighborhood and who's going to pay for it. When new industry comes to a community, that's good news, but you also want to know accurately what the government did with your money to help bring that industry to town. What were the giveaways? At no time in recent history in our country has the credibility of the media been as strained as it is today. In a lot of ways, the reputation of journalists is equal to or worse than those guys in Congress. This is a problem for the press. This is a problem for society. And it's a problem for you. So let's see if we can do something about that. I'm often asked, why is the trust in media so low? What's happened? Well, take a look at the country, and you can answer that question yourself. Look at what happens with the national news. Cable news network is less a source of information and more a source of invective and screaming and shouting panelists. National publications right now are trying to out-Trump each other. They strain for the news stories that will give them the credit for breaking news in ways that, frankly, many Americans, even if they are not supporters of Trump, don't sense is fair. Take a look just recently how the media handled the coverage of the Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court nominee hearings. You may or may not remember a particular story that the New York Times did during that, when it breathlessly reported that while in college, in a bar, Brett Kavanaugh had the nerve to throw a glass of ice in another man's face. That was treated as a major scoop. Really? Is that what this country needs to know about the people who are elevating to public service in this country? You look at the metropolises across the country, Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago, Denver, in every one of those major cities, newspapers have folded and gone away. Those that remain have laid off staff, are providing thinner coverage, and spend way too much time with what's called clickbait, the idea of luring you to their site with some jazzy story that really is nothing more than news cotton candy with no substance that leaves you very satisfied. You look at the media landscape just here in Oregon. Think of the time, I remember at the Oregonian, when I started there in 1976, the newsroom had 400 employees just in the newsroom. Today, the total employment in the Oregonian newsroom is about 80. You have seen declines in staffing at papers like the Register Guard, long regarded as a strong, reliable, credible local newspaper. Under chain national ownership, staffing has been slashed, and so has coverage. You look at the state's capital newspaper, the Salem Statesman Journal, once a proud source of unbeatable news about what's going on in state government. I dare you to look at a week's coverage in the Statesman and find very much that you will learn about state government. What does this all mean? Well, with the smaller newspapers, a smaller staff, and a smaller audience, you have fewer people asking questions on your behalf of holding government officials accountable, of holding industry accountable, of holding nonprofits accountable. The press clearly has its problems. The public across the country is highly suspect of the national news. At the local level, we're not getting the coverage, with exceptions like the Astorian. We're not getting the rich and deep news coverage that is so vital to our understanding of what's happening in our communities. We are told more, but we know less. And while the press has problems, we have partners in the blame for what's going on in this country with this. That's you, the people. Across the country, we are divided people right now. We are divided politically, economically, and socially. We have become what is now the popular term tribal. And this is not talking about the Kootenai Indians coming to the coast. We're talking about people dividing into their political and economic clans at war with one another over these issues. Too many people, too many of you, chase news that suits your tribal view, that makes you feel comfortable, that makes you feel like you are part of the tribe. So why is that? Well, the Pew Trust, a big national trust, and the Knight Foundation recently did a very interesting experiment. They wanted to find out how you approach news and what filters you bring to your view of news. So this was the experiment. They identified people who self-identified as Republicans, and they split them in two groups. They gave one group a series of stories that were published by the New York Times, and they were told they were published by the New York Times. The second group was given the same stories, but they had no idea the source of the story. Those who read the story, the Republicans who read the New York Times story knowing it was from the New York Times, didn't trust the story. Republicans who read the very same story who didn't know who authored the story trusted that story. Let's not leave the Democrats out. They did the same thing with Democrats and provided them stories from Fox News. Same thing. Half of the Democrats in the survey were told the story you're reading is coming from Fox News. The other half was told this is a story, we're not telling you the source. The findings were nearly identical, that those who knew the source was Fox discredited the report. Those who didn't know the source believed the story. What's the lesson of this? Well, there's good news in this, and it tells us that you news consumers are smart. And when you read a story and you see sources identified by name and you see documents referenced and you see straight information and you don't see opinion, you know more than likely you can trust that this story is fair and accurate. So we see that this filter gets in the way of how each of you and each of the people across the country perceive the news that they're receiving. And of course, layer this on with the 2 years that you have heard about fake news. Now, once upon a time, fake news was pretty easy to understand. It was phony. It was made up. It was not true. Fake news. Today, far too often, fake news is not phony or false. It's stories that a reader or a viewer just doesn't like. There's a big difference between something that's made up and reading something that is true, but you just don't like it, and you declare that it is false. But think about this. If there were so much fake news, false news, phony news, what would be happening to the media? CNN would not exist if its audience believed every story put out there was a lie. Nobody is going to sit down and purposely watch a diet of lies. The same with newspapers. And then, of course, businesses, Ford, McDonald's, the major corporations of America, they're not going to attach their name to a steady diet of lies being told to the American people. So we have this profound disconnect that is getting worse in this country, where Americans don't trust the news they get or they read unless it's from a source that feeds their tribal territory. We have been here before. And let me give you a little bit of history, because I think history is important to understand how we might solve today's problem. In New York City in the late 1800s, there was a publisher by the name of Joseph Pulitzer. You may have heard of him, the Pulitzer Prizes. I've got a couple letters with his name on it. I'm pretty proud of those. He was an experienced journalist from St. Louis, decided to try his skills in the big city. Went to New York, took over a newspaper in New York, and to build circulation, slashed the price of his paper to a penny. And then to build circulation even more, he began adding lurid stories and exaggerated stories. Then along came a gentleman from San Francisco, William Randolph Hearst. Hearst saw what was going on in New York, smelled the opportunity, bought his way into the New York newspaper environment, and he too slashed the price of his paper to a penny. And they began running a cartoon called The Yellow Kid. And that was the source of the phrase that developed fairly quickly of yellow journalism. And yellow journalism in that day and age was journalism meant to drive circulation, the modern equivalent of clickbait. Sensational crimes, political corruption, stories literally made up. I mean, William Randolph Hearst was a magnificent promoter and sent reporters to Cuba as tensions between Cuba and the United States developed, and set the stage for the Spanish-American War. And there's a famous story about Hearst sending his reporters there, and they're reporting back to him, there's nothing going on. And Hearst wired back to them, you send me the pictures, I'll give you the war. And that, of course, was fake news. Hearst and Pulitzer battled back and forth to dominate the newspaper market, and the news market, of course, there was no cable TV, no television back then. That was the primary source of news. And they went back and forth with the most lurid, sensational stories you can imagine, and circulation went through the roof. As they battled, a publisher from Chattanooga, Tennessee, decided he too would try his fortunes in New York City. He bought into a New York paper, one that was about to fail. He looked around the landscape and decided there has to be a better way. So he dumped the sensationalism of his newspaper. He started reporting the news of government, of shipping, of the industries important to New York City without hype, with a focus on integrity and on telling the truth. And his focus on integrity was unshakable, because this man recognized in his time in New York that the people of New York were tired of the sensationalism and of not knowing what was happening in truth at the New York City Hall, at the ports, at the docks. His newspaper started to grow, and it grew, and it grew, and it grew. And soon, Hearst and Pulitzer, who for so long dominated the New York landscape, were in his rearview mirror, and they were the ones failing, and he was succeeding. That man was Adolph Ochs, the newspaper, the New York Times. Serious journalism won the day back then. The ideals that Adolf Axe took with him to New York are the ideals that have driven me in a lifetime in journalism. What he and other reporters like me and all that have gone before me and those that come before, that will follow in my footsteps. We do have a passion for truth and integrity and fairness. What he did in New York was to tell the truth, to be fair, and to show no fear, and to show no favor. Thousands of reporters do that on your behalf right now, every single day across this country. Do we make mistakes? Yes. Do sometimes stories lean one way or the other, or appear to lean one way or the other? Yes. Are stories missed on occasion? Yes. But is it intentional? And I can tell you from 45 years of being in this profession and training countless reporters that almost every instance of a misstep of that is unintentional. It is the result of the need for speed, of inexperience, of simply human error. It is not the result of a reporter going to work in the morning and deciding, I'm going to write a false story. You just have to know that about the journalists, whether they work for newspapers, radio stations, or television stations. They are honorable people who work very hard at this profession to serve you and to serve this country. They're not doing it for prizes, most of us. They're not doing it, certainly, for the pay. They're doing it for a deep belief in what is meant by the First Amendment and the need for a free press in this country. But our profession at this time has to kind of do what Adolf Axe did. We have to return to our roots and our traditions. We have to sharpen our skills. We have to be honest about our mistakes, and we have to ask for your help. It was my lifetime in Oregon journalism that took me to Vail, Oregon, when I'm supposed to be retiring after my very full career. I had no more journalistic mountains to climb. I had no need for another job. But what tugged at me was learning that this Mount Hure enterprise was about ready to close. A newspaper that has served this remote county for more than 100 years was about to wink out. And in a small community, a local news source is vital to the community. It is a glue to hold a community together. It is a fuel for progress in a community when it is done right. Think about Mount Hure County. It is literally in another time zone from the rest of Oregon. It is the poorest county in Oregon. The poverty rate in Mount Hure County, for those 33,000 people, 35% of them live below poverty. The size of Mount Hure County is staggering. There are 9 states in this country that are smaller than that one county. And it is into this environment that Scotta and I stepped to try and save a paper that was so important to this community, and it should be. So what did we do? Frankly, the echoes of Adolf Axe was in the back of my mind, because I've read his biography about 20 times at various times in my career. I can tell you his story from birth to death. He's been an idol and a guide for me in many ways. So what did we do at the Enterprise? Well, they were running press releases unchanged from government agencies and public relations firms, running that as news. It was publishing quote-unquote columns from government officials, and you can imagine how fair and balanced those columns were and how much they really told you about what the government official was doing. We started asking harder questions of public officials. County officials in Mount Hure County had not been asked for a public record in years. And we started asking for budget information, for expense records. And they sort of turned white about this idea that someone was asking to see what they thought were their records. We didn't back down from a fight, not once, because we knew we were there not to make the public officials look good and serve them. We were there to serve the people of Maricopa County who had a right and a need to know where their taxpayer money was going, what decisions public officials were making, and which public officials might be bending their public duty to match their personal interests. And we started social media. This paper did not have a website, no Facebook, no Twitter, any of that. And we recognized that if we wanted to serve our community, we had to go where people were these days, which is online. So what happened with our aggressive, straight-ahead, no-nonsense brand of journalism? The community reacted favorably and very strongly. It confirmed our judgment that people did want good local news. They wanted us to be their watchdog. They wanted us to look out for their interests and do that in a fair and accurate way that they could trust. As a result, subscription cancellations turned into subscription starts. Advertising that had businesses that had not advertised in the Maricopa Enterprise ever, if in decades, came back to us and came back to us in a big way, as much for what we were doing to serve the community as for the increased circulation. Why did these things happen? What's happening in Vail and Maricopa County, I believe, is happening across the country. People like you just want to know the truth fairly and accurately about what's going on. You want to be left to make up your own minds about what to do about that, but you want the information to act. And in Maricopa County, people have absorbed that lesson. We have a very competitive race in Ontario for the mayor. Four gentlemen running for the mayor of Ontario, city of about 11,000. And I've been interviewing all of the candidates to make an endorsement and editorial. And a gentleman who's been a very prominent developer in Ontario and a philanthropist, after we talked for about a half hour, he started walking away. And he just sort of turned to me, got kind of a smile on his face. And he said, you know, I just want to let you know, you guys pack a lot of weight these days. Well, that was worth a fortune to me, that this man who had been there since the 1970s recognized what we were doing and the value of that to the community. What I can't do and what you can't do is change what's happening in national media. None of us is going to change CNN, Fox, the Washington Times, the New York Times. We can change, however, what's happening at the state level and the local level. As journalists, we need to double down on our duties to you. We have to get better at our reporting and with our skills. We have to dig harder to find the truth that you should know. We have to stop doing the easy work that fills time or fills space and do the hard work of real journalism. We have to tell you when we're wrong and why we're wrong. Ask your forgiveness and hope you'll stick with us. And then we have to do one other thing. We have to share with you what motivates us. We have to tell you that we seek the truth. We have to tell you that we are ethically bound. For far too long, publishers, editors, reporters, TV newscasters have just assumed that each one of you knows that we operate with this framework of ethics and standards. We're not in the assumption business. If we're going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the community, we need to tell you the truth about what motivates us and share that with you. Just as much as we have a duty, you have a duty as well to make this change. if you want news that you can trust. You have to know when a news source is credible and believable, and know that credible news makes a difference in your life, that it is important to you to get the truth. You have to recognize that what's on the internet is not always true, is not always factual, should not be tweeted or shared as, look what I just found, as the truth. We just have to restrain ourselves from accepting anything on the internet as authoritative unless you know the source. You have to recognize that public relations and even government at all levels is spending more money on public relations because there are fewer reporters. And so a lot of government agencies are filling the void with their quote-unquote newsletters, with their information posts. Ladies and gentlemen, public relations does not equal verified fact. So what can you do? You can subscribe. I don't care if it's the Daily Astorian, an online news product like the Salem Reporter, or public broadcasting. With your subscription, with your financial investment, what you are signaling and should be signaling is that you want and you will back sources of accurate and fair news. We need you to join us, to be our partners, to help turn this around. Not to save the news media, but to help the community, the state, and the country. With a stronger news media, you're going to get more information about the things that you care about. You're going to know more about the decisions being made in Astoria, Warrenton, and Seaside. And you're going to have information to help make your community stronger as a better place to raise a family, as a better place to educate kids, a better place to start a business. One by one, community by community, all working together, we can get stronger with the information, with truth, with an adherence to what is good. And when you are stronger, your community is stronger. We are all stronger. And when we are all stronger, our country will be strong, civil, and hopeful. Thank you very much. Keep going, that's fine.